The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Today, a weary French victory, an easy Croatia one, a messy miss, and the two best kits go head-to-head, Peru and Denmark, in which Quaver melts and the Danes take advantage. There's plenty of VAR, which is tremendously exciting, and we'll have a little look ahead to tomorrow's games as Germany and Brazil kick off their campaigns. As always, we'll answer your questions and we'll find out if Barry has eaten anything today. All coming up on today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Scott writes, after how many daily podcasts will Barry Glendening finally break and just do the podcast half cut while chain smoking?
I think that'd be sackable offence, so I can't.
You would, but you can't.
Yeah.
Philippe Auclair.
I'd do it all the time like that if I could.
Philippe Auclair, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you on. Are you enjoying the tournament so far?
Yes, I'm caught in, like everybody else, I'm trying to remember which games I've seen, not seen. It's been this kind of binge, really. Mm.
Are you enjoying it more than the 2 minutes of Love Island we just made you watch?
Very much so. I'd never seen anything from Love Island. That's why I'm a bit in shock. I had no idea that this is what, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Well, this is really unfair.
Yeah, because it's not the way to put you in the right place of peace of mind.
Did you think it would be something slightly more highbrow than a girl in a white bikini saying to a bloke in swimming trunks that she'd think he'd make a good guinea pig if he came back as a guinea pig?
I didn't want to know. I just wanted to ignore it, pretend that it never existed.
I mean, to be fair, they were being quite existentialist, and, you know, talking about reincarnation
and metempsychosis and all that. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
There are certainly more lowbrow moments you could have chanced upon. Anyway, let's start with Group D then. Argentina won, Iceland won. We can talk to Jonathan Wilson, who is at the game. Where do we find you, Jonathan?
I'm near Pushkinskaya metro station in central Moscow. I've just come in from the stadium. I'm with Barney and Archie in a very strange restaurant that seems to serve both Japanese food and pizza. So I'm a Japanese starter and a pizza for main.
It's absolutely outrageous behaviour, frankly. What was the atmosphere?
Well, what is the World Cup if it's not about mixing cultures?
Okay, no, I take it back. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium?
Oh, it's pretty good, actually. I mean, the Argentinians, I'd say, outnumbered the Icelandic fans by probably 3-1, 4-1. They were very noisy to start with and became increasingly frustrated as the game went on. And the Iceland fans were, as Iceland fans are, doing their thunderclaps and singing that very slow, moving song that they sing. And I actually wonder whether Iceland were a bit better here than they were at the Euros. I was quite impressed by them in a way that, you know, the Euros, I sort of thought they were limited and played within their limitations. Here, I thought they actually looked, you know, a decent side.
How much talk around the dinner table is about Lionel Messi and his performance?
Around the dinner table, literally none. we mentioned Nigeria, and no, because we read out the team. But Messi clearly is either talking point around other dinner tables. I don't know. I don't think he had that bad a game. I think it's a difficult game for him. I think we've seen this with Argentina repeatedly. That when they play against teams who pack men behind the ball, especially when they pack that central area, as Iceland did, there's just no space. It doesn't matter who you are. If there's no space, it's very hard to play. So, you know, it's very similar to the three group games in the last World Cup, each of which they won by a single goal. If he'd scored the penalty, then they would also win by a single goal. But there was a horrible sense today that he was being tested against Ronaldo, that they both had a penalty, Ronaldo scored, he didn't. They both had a last-minute free kick, Ronaldo scored, he didn't. And there's even a point of comparison that when Iceland drew 1-1 against Portugal at the Euros, Ronaldo had 10 shots and didn't score. Today, Messi had 11 and didn't score.
I imagine the talk around your dinner table, what with Barney being seated at it, Jonathan, it's all about VAR. Because Barney loves a good chat about VAR.
You're absolutely right. It's slightly freakish. I don't know if you've got a got a listing device in the salt cellar or something. But yes, VAR has very much been the hot topic. Barney, I believe, has written a piece on VAR for tomorrow's paper, which I think is something we all look forward to. you can't believe the look of absolute delight that crossed his face when he took the phone call saying, "Can you do a VAR piece?" And, you know, punching the air, beating his chest in glee, he settled down to it, and we all watched the Peru-Denmark game while he ground that out.
Philippe, Messi has missed penalties, and it's something that you were interested in talking about.
I wanted to, because actually there's a feeling that he misses an awful lot of penalties, but he actually scores an awful lot of them. And the actual numbers... is 79 successful penalties, 24 missed penalties, which sounds like an awful lot, which means that he only converts 77%. But actually, I think that, Jonathan, you'll probably correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's about the average at the World Cup, isn't it?
I think that is almost exactly average.
Yeah.
But my question would be, I saw that stat earlier as well, I'd like to see a breakdown over time, because my suspicion is... he used to be utterly reliable, and he started missing more and more. Now, I haven't seen the stat, but my sense is that although over his career he's completely average, he was very good to start with, and I think he's got worse. I may be wrong about that, but that's the impression that I have.
Has there ever been a debate in Argentina about Aguero taking the penalties, who's actually better, has got a better record as a penalty taker, or that Messi?
Yeah, Aguero hasn't really been in the team until, I mean, it's only sort of last week that he displaced Higuain even in training. So maybe that debate will come. But I think Aguero just wasn't a fixture in the side, so it was never really a question people got round to. And obviously, you would not trust Higuain from the spot. I mean, I remember that time he missed three or four in a row for Napoli. So you look at that Argentina side, and I think Messi probably... still is the obvious taker. Although, yeah, if Aguero does become a fixture, then maybe it does shift to him.
Johnson, I don't know if you've heard, but Iceland is the smallest nation ever to compete at the World Cup, and has a population...
Yeah, no, there was a rumour going around that suggested that, yeah.
Yeah, their population is apparently just under 350,000 people. Are you surprised they're doing so well for the second tournament in a row? I must say, I thought they'd get tonked today, and I was very pleasantly surprised to see they didn't. I still think they were quite lucky, but they played very well.
Yeah, I am a bit surprised, because the history tells us that when you get a small nation like that, they qualify for two tournaments in a row, often the second one falls a bit flat. The sort of the euphoria that's carried them through the first one has dissipated. Other teams have begun to work them out and begun to take them a bit more seriously. I think, yeah, that may still come, because, you know, Argentina could have won the game quite, 2-3-0 or 2-3-1, and it wouldn't have been an outrage. So, you know, it's not an easy group, and they there's no guarantee at all they'll pick up another point. They may go through. But I was a bit surprised. I was very sceptical about the midfield, because Sigurdsson and Gunnarsson have both had knee issues. But both apparently, Gunnarsson came off, didn't he? But both seemingly a fit, which is obviously a concern. And you wonder as well whether they've got depth up front with Sigurdsson not being there. But Finn Bogason played well today, so maybe it doesn't matter.
But there's something nice about Iceland in the fact that, unlike even, say, Australia today, who wanted to play it out from the back and didn't go long that much, Iceland are not afraid to mix it. And they, you know, a long throw against defenders who probably never, ever see anyone take a long throw seems like a very sensible idea to me.
Yeah, and those long throws I was right down at the front, and I was right behind Gunnarsson when he launched one into the box in the first half. And he is extraordinary. But yeah, the length he gets on it, the power of his arms. He was hitting the penalty spot from the touchline, which is incredible. But one thing I did wonder is, I wonder whether he favours his right arm. And I wonder if it's almost a one-handed throw with a second hand supporting. I want to have a look at the replay before I start saying that there's something wrong with the technique. But you could see spin on the ball, which suggests to me there's a lot more power coming from the right arm than the left.
Was there talk around the table as well about the Argentinian defence, which was so regularly punctured by the Icelanders, certainly in the first half?
Well, yeah,
on the right-hand side, it was just extraordinary.
Yeah, I think that is the big concern rather than going forward. I think you know, playing against a team who's 8 men behind the ball is difficult, and they still created quite a few chances and, you know, could have won it easily. The bigger concern, I think, as you say, is at the back. But I think that idea of sitting Mascherano sort of 10 yards in front of Otamendi and Rocco sort of makes sense as a breakwater for attacks coming through the middle. But the way the fullbacks push on, almost as wingbacks, means they're incredibly vulnerable to attacks from wide. And there'd been Bjarnason's chance even before the goal, where he just turned up and marked at the back post with pretty much a nothing cross. So, you know, I think that is a real concern, that they're very, very vulnerable in wide areas.
And unlikely to win the World Cup with Willy Caballero in goal, I reckon. Hey, Jonathan, enjoy your sushi pizza.
Cheers, thanks very much. I'll pass on your wishes for good dining to Barney and Archie.
I absolutely
please do.
Thank you very much, Jonathan Wilson there. Dining with Barney and Archie Rintoul, who no doubt we will speak to through the tournament. That result and Croatia's victory over Nigeria means that Croatia are top of Group D, 2-0. And what we thought might be the group of death, Philippe, really might not be the group of death.
Well, it might be the group of quick and painful death for Nigeria, really. Yeah,
they were poor. I mean, Croatia,
they were so
solid.
Disappointing. It's not as if Croatia looked absolutely fantastic. They actually looked in second gear for most of the time. A few accelerations. They've got some very classy players, we know that. But it's hard to remember Nigeria creating anything that was genuinely dangerous. They looked slow. They looked unimaginative. They didn't really look up for, particularly for a fight or anything like that.
It didn't look, Barry, like they had any sort of creativity in the field either.
No, and they have some good players, but they... It's like they didn't realise they were at the World Cup. You know, and it's every year or every time there's a World Cup on, we hope, oh, this will be the year that an African team goes deep in the competition. And, you know, Morocco lost yesterday. Possibly shouldn't have, but they did. Nigeria just went out with a whimper against Croatia. Tim Vickery has been very vocal on Twitter saying that North African teams, you know, Egypt as well, of course, sorry, they lost and they were feeble. And Tim Vickery, he was talking specifically about North African teams, but that just every World Cup comes around, they just make the same mistakes over and over and over and over and again and keep expecting something different to happen. So I don't know if it's just an African mentality or what, but they constantly disappoint.
Well, no. Tunisia are left, aren't they? Which is terrifying because they could turn it all around, couldn't they? I mean, there was a really fun foul for the penalty by Ekong on Mandzukic. I mean, I literally have no idea what he was doing, Barry. I don't know if you can, how you would describe it.
Well, was it Moonraker, where James Bond and Jaws jump out of the plane and they're both fighting over one parachute and sort of one has his arms around the other and they're grappling in midair, you know, each trying to take the parachute when they could just have shared it, you know, for the greater good. But anyway, that's kind of what it reminded me of.
So Ekong is in the Jaws role.
Well, I mean, in that fight, it's not. But, so, you know, imagine a tandem parachute jump, but you don't have a harness, so one person's holding on to the other for dear life. And that it was a bit like that.
Yeah. I think this is how Tintin escapes his demise in one of his early stories, Le Sceptre d'Otokar.
No? I'm just scrolling through all the Tintins I can remember, and no, none.
No? You don't. I think that's the way.
Was he with Captain Haddock at the time?
He's jumping off a plane, okay. And I think this is the way that he saved, is that he's jumping, but that somebody with a parachute, so there are two people with a single parachute. But that was successful, whereas our Nigerian friend was not so successful.
He wasn't successful.
No.
But it was great fun. And Modric put away the penalty, and he had a good game, didn't he?
Yes, he had an excellent game, Max. No, they looked, I mean, Rakitic as well had a very good game. But again, they didn't have to perform to the best of their abilities or anything like that. It looked very comfortable. And given the earlier result, It means that Nigeria, I've got, I mean, people say a mountain to climb. I think it's probably like a whole mountain range to climb, because you see that defense and that lack of cohesion, lack of defensive cohesion and organization, and you imagine that against Argentina, for example, and you think, no, it's not going to... not going to happen for them.
Yeah, and you think
it's very, very disappointing, because you genuinely thought that they, you know, Gernot Rohr had genuinely found a way to make them play, that things had been clicking and so forth, and then comes the disappointment.
I mean, Argentina may not get through this group now.
Yeah, there's always been a possibility, but one thing is, Croatia look. You know, they genuinely looked okay, but not fantastic. It was a very underwhelming game, or is it maybe because it was our 27th in 24 hours?
Possibly. I mean, we did at one point start Googling the Croatia manager, Zlatko Dalic, mainly because I was impressed with whether he had an undercut, which for a 51-year-old is
it Dalic, like Dalic Hamlets?
I believe so. Mm. And then we discovered his son is a superstar DJ, Barry.
Well, it depends on your definition of superstar, but he is DJ in chief at some resort in Croatia.
Mm. The biggest open air beach club in Croatia, Tony Dalic.
I'll go superstar then.
Okay,
yeah.
Good stuff.
You know, it's all just pressing a button and waving, pointing at things with your other hand.
We should do those University Freshers Week circuits, Barry, me and you. Press it playing Chumbawamba. Are you in?
Do you think? I don't think we're famous enough to get the gig, even as a novelty act.
That is sad, isn't it?
Maybe if the Crankies pull out, we can be on standby.
I mean, at some point we may need the work, Barry. So
I'm not ruling anything out. And to be honest, during this World Cup, you're doing worse.
I don't know what you mean. That'll do anyway for part one. In part two, we will look at Group C, and we'll begin, Philippe, with France's 2-1 demolition of Australia.
Demolition, yeah.
Welcome to part two. We have a live show, by the way, on the 12th of July in London, starring Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Philippe Auclair.
Présent.
And Ellis James. Either of you want to try a Welsh accent?
Hello.
That's pretty good, Barry. It's July the 12th. At the Emmanuel Centre. Please come along. We'll be previewing the World Cup final and talking about anything else that you'd like us to talk about. Group C, France 2, Australia 1. Philippe Auclair, you have been warning us for months that France would be rubbish. And do you know what? I looked at the squad and I thought, I'm not sure I believe Philippe. And I'd like to say I was wrong. They were tragically bad.
They won, as Didier Deschamps will remind you and everybody else, but it was painful to watch. It was horrid, really. But it's exactly what we've seen in, you know, I think almost ever since Didier Deschamps has been in charge of the team. They will get results because there are some remarkably gifted individuals or capable of moment of brilliance, or they will have one good phase, like what brought Pogba's goal or own goal or whatever. I don't know how to
I call it an own goal.
I think it's an own goal myself. But otherwise, there is no rhythm. The team is, you talk about lacking cohesion. It does lack cohesion. It lacks creativity, which is crazy for when you think of the players who are on the field. There is an unwillingness to press.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about absolutely extraordinary, considering the opponent they were against, especially.
I watched Australia in qualifying a fair bit, and they weren't great, okay? And I watched them really sort of attritionally beat down Syria and Thailand, I think it was. And their players, I thought they played very well today, much better than I've seen them play before in the last couple of years. However, that back four is not a great back four, and they were afforded so much time by a very quick front three. I just didn't understand it.
No, and you could imagine that perhaps, as Didier Deschamps said, it was first game of the tournament, we were not really switched on, but there was hardly any difference after his team talk at half-time. They just let Australians play with so much time on the ball, which was ridiculous. There is a genuine problem, I think, around, and I'm sorry to mention that again, but around Pogba's position and situation in that team. I genuinely think it's not happening. And I know he scored or was involved in the goal, in the second goal, decisive goal. But I keep thinking there is something which is just wrong about this midfield. And N'Golo Kante was playing like a sentinel, like a Claude Makélélé. He's so much more than that. He can offer so much more going forward. He's actually a very creative player when he goes forward. He can run past people. Tolisso was also playing far too deep. There was no pressure applied by Griezmann and Dembélé and Mbappé up front. They're not that kind of players. Perhaps Griezmann is, but not the other two. It got a bit better once Fekir and Giroud came on, but it was totally underwhelming. And I think a win actually flatters them. And I mean, Deschamps is absolutely delighted with the result, obviously, and he has every reason to be, but against a better team than what is a pretty humble Australia. I mean, I'm not saying they're crap, they qualified for the World Cup, but they are one of the more modest teams in that competition. I don't know. It's things that we've talked about it here many times before, and I can't see any progress, any improvement. And perhaps the team will change. Perhaps Deschamps will think again about the way his team is put together and will change a few things. And also Umtiti, my goodness gracious me, that is already the great comedy moment of this World Cup.
That handball was great, wasn't it, Barry?
It was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, you see players do that from time to time, and it's just inexplicable. But
he probably thought there was somebody coming behind him, but the hand is like, yeah, it is volleyball.
Barry, before the pod, you were itching to talk about the VAR from this game, weren't you?
Oh, God.
Oh, there's one more to come as well, but carry on.
Well, I think we should give Australia some credit first before we move on to the tedious subject of VAR. They work, you know, they are a limited side, but they work really hard. They were compact. They had a plan. They stuck to it. France were trying to play through balls in behind for Griezmann to chase and Mbappe. Australia kept things tight, didn't leave any gaps. So hats off for that. And Emil Jedinak afterwards was, you know, very much focusing on the positives of their performance. So they can take heart from a good performance, although they possibly should have, you know, they deserved a point, I thought. The VAR, Josh Risden brought down Antoine Griezmann. It was a foul. People were arguing afterwards in, you know, pundits, fans on Twitter, whatever, saying it wasn't a foul. It was. He was fouled. VAR was used. It was a correct decision. So I'm not sure what the debate was. The debate seems to be between people who do understand the laws of football and people who don't.
See, I wasn't sure it was a foul. I mean, I
to start with, but then when you see it again, you realise there is a foul afterwards. Yes.
But it's whatever. What's the word? Clear and blatant.
Clear and obvious.
That's it. Clear and obvious.
It was a foul. Okay. He tripped him.
Yeah, you're right. Philly, two questions.
Oui?
Is Pavard really the best right back in France because he's lousy? And Hernandez, is he the earliest candidate for bastard of the tournament?
I think Lucas Hernandez, absolutely, definitely. And I think if he stands a good chance of winning that distinction. It's one of the things, actually. I was talking to Bakary Sagnab just a week ago about the fullback situation in France, okay? And one of the first things he mentioned for Lucas Hernandez, and he was laughing, he was saying, yeah, I really rate him. He can do everything. And he knows when to stay on the floor, and which is one of the first things that he said about him.
It was mind-numbing.
It's been at the Diego Simeone finishing school. So and he's got, I think, also natural talent for that. It was absolutely superb. When it comes to Pavard, he's actually a very good player, very young player, but he's not a right-back. He's played for Stuttgart. He's been, I think, a mainstay of their defence throughout the season. And he's played, I think, two or three times, perhaps, as a fullback, but he's a central defender.
Are there no fullbacks in France?
Well, I keep saying, I remember when the 23s were announced, I said, where is Mathieu Debuchy? And people would say, okay, Debuchy, forget about him. No. When he came back to Saint-Etienne, he's had an absolutely wonderful end of the second half of the season with Saint-Etienne. Defensively, he's very solid, and he also brings a lot forward. And he's a proper defender. And for some reason, nope, didn't take him. We've talked about that. The absence of good fullbacks is a huge problem for this French team.
And in international football, they seem to they have a lot of the ball, so they have to do something with it. Denmark beat Peru, Barry.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this game.
Great kits.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Two great kits. I really wanted Peru to win because Denmark eliminated Ireland in that very tight playoff in Dublin. But, yeah. Oh.
Peru was so unlucky.
Well, were they? They were unlucky, but they were also the architects of their own demise. They had a penalty, the opportunity. Like, they roared out of the blocks. And I don't think the Danes knew what hit them for about 15 minutes. It was like they were being attacked by a swarm of bees. And Peru couldn't make their dominance count. And then just before half time, they get a penalty, which is missed.
Good use of VAR. I enjoyed that. It felt like a cricket match, that bit of VAR. You know, it was like, oh, we think it's a foul. They go over and everyone sits, and then the crowd knew, and then everyone, I thought it was a good bit of VAR.
Yeah.
But it was not a good penalty.
Yeah, Christian Cueva, I think maybe he got the jitters. It was sort of, he waddled it over the bar, didn't he?
Higher than waddle, I would say. Less power, but higher than waddle. It was more Baggio, I think.
And yeah, or Platini as well. Platini did as well.
But they were very impressive, Peru, and I do feel sorry for them. But and Yusuf Poulsen was at the centre of everything for Denmark. He conceded the penalty. He scored the winner. He was involved in all the major talking points during the game. Christian Eriksen, I thought, had a mixed enough game. He provided the assist for the winner, but his dead ball delivery was awful, like shockingly bad, and it's hard to explain. And we were discussing earlier that we all think there's something maybe weird going on with the grass in a few stadiums.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Wilson's mentioned that he thinks that, well, one pitch in particular, the one at Ketterinnenberg, was too dry, needed to be watered. Well, I mean, this could be nonsense.
Has anybody seen the pitches being watered actually before or at half time? I haven't seen. I might have.
No, because before a game, I'm watching something else as a palate cleanser for the next football match.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good bit when Take Me Out came on, Celebrity Take Me Out came on between the third and the fourth game today.
Mm. But I think missing the penalty as well might have affected Cueva's he was obviously gutted.
Yeah, took him time to get going again in the second half.
Any time he got the ball, I mean, he's fabled as a very good playmaker, but he kept picking the wrong passes, making the wrong decisions. And I think maybe he was trying too hard to atone for the missed penalty.
Which is the first one he's ever missed for Peru. Oh,
really? They bought on Guerrero, their hero.
And he was good.
He made a big difference.
That back heel just wide. Oh. And he's got a lion tattooed to his neck as well, which is fantastic. And I thought, is it Andre Carrillo on the right?
Carrillo, yeah.
Had really good pace down there.
And the right back, Advíncula.
Advíncula. Mm.
Superb.
William Quist is out of the tournament with a broken rib.
Yeah, I'd like to know also what happened to Christiansen, because that's very unusual to see a central defender leaving the field like this, as he did in what, 80th minute or so. Quist is a big loss.
Yeah, but that group is, it'd be interesting to see now with that group as well. Still open.
That match also featured the first ever appearance at a World Cup of a Brentford player in Henrik Dalsgaard, Danish right back.
Well done to the bees. There were quite a few tweets about Ricardo Gareca, the Peru manager, and who he looks like. Rob said, "I thought Tom Petty was dead." Apparently not. He's now the Peru football manager. Stuart didn't know Iggy Pop had gone from swift cover to front man to head coach of Peru. And Tim says, "Great to see Martina Navratilova managing Peru."
I thought David Carradine was dead.
My first thought was Martina Navratilova, I must say.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we are. Anyway, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll look ahead to tomorrow's games. Welcome to part three. Let's look briefly at tomorrow's games. We'll do it in chronological order, gentlemen, because that's as much as I can cope with now. The amount of football that it seems to be happening. Costa Rica, Serbia at 1 p.m. Barry, potentially not the standout fixture of the day, but you never know.
Well, you say that, but let's not forget Costa Rica got to the quarterfinals last time around. They topped a group with your brave, lion-hearted boys in it when England absolutely disgraced themselves.
I think we were very unlucky.
I think this time in the last World Cup, what, yeah, 3 days in, England were already out. But, yeah, Costa Rica did quite well. They are managed by Oscar Ramirez, who Scottish people will remember fondly for his role in the defeat against them in the 1990 World Cup. And, you know, big-name players, Keylor Navas in goal, and somebody else who I can't remember. Paolo Wanchope, that's it. Paolo Wanchope.
My goodness.
And Serbia, I don't know what to make of them. They've got some standout players. Nemanja Matic, Milinkovic, Savic, Dusan Tadic, Alexander Mitrovic, finished the season in fine form. But they were very, very unconvincing winners of a terrible group in which Wales and Ireland fans would both be kicking themselves tomorrow when they see Serbia lining up, because that was a very poor group, and Serbia won it, but they weren't up to much. Certainly not in their games against Ireland or Wales, I didn't think.
You haven't totally sold it to me. I mean, I'll watch it, but they have got Joel Campbell as well, Costa Rica.
Yeah,
who sort of came to prominence at the last World Cup.
Still with Arsenal.
We were discussing this while watching the Nigeria Croatia game. Yes, he's been at Lorient, Betis, Olympiacos, Villarreal, Sporting Lisbon, back to Betis. Sort of like a lovely set of city breaks that he's been on, but is still contracted to Arsenal. How do you see it going, Philippe?
To be honest, I've seen so much of Costa Rica recently that I have absolutely no idea.
Well, I saw them against England. They didn't look good against England.
Yeah, it's an old squad as well. Very old, actually, one of the oldest in the World Cup, nearly 30 years of age. I mean, with quite a few old customers that we know, because we've talked about, we've mentioned Joel Campbell, but somebody who is very close to Baz's heart is in the team, Oviedo, legendary Sunderland star, and also Brian Ruiz, one of the handsomest footballers around.
Did he play with Berbatov at Fulham? The most relaxed, centre-forward partnership of all time? Just two calm men strolling around, controlling goal kicks, but not running around a lot.
You could say about Serbia that you didn't see the real Serbia during the qualification. They do have a very strong squad, going forward.
They have a new manager now, though. The guy they qualified under is gone, and Mladen Krstajic is his replacement. Don't know much about him. I believe the Serbian public don't have a huge amount of faith in him. He doesn't have much experience. But, you know, I couldn't call this. I wasn't impressed with Serbia at all in qualifying. But I don't know enough about Costa Rica to...
Next.
Yeah.
Germany-Mexico, 4 p.m. I guess, Philippe, a lot of eyes from our point of sort of British point of view on who's playing instead of Leroy Sané, and more globally, fitness of Manuel Neuer.
Good question, because precisely it's not absolutely clear who is going to play on the left side. I think people have gone for Marco Reus, but the word I heard today was that Julian Draxler was very much in the reckoning, which would mean a front four of Thomas Müller, Özil, Draxler, and Timo Werner. Which is quite impressive, really. But Germany has, honestly, after the qualifications, they were fantastic, did the job superbly, but they've been really quite sluggish recently. I mean, they only beat Saudi Arabia 2-1 the other day. Saudi Arabia, which was probably, much better than what we saw in the opening game. But they have been quite unconvincing during their preparation, and they would probably say that, it's always when the competition starts that you'll see the real side, you know, the real Germany. But they have been quite unconvincing, despite the fact of having an absolutely superb squad to count on. And against a Mexican team, which is perhaps not as good as some of the previous ones they've sent to the World Cup. A bit aging as well. I mean, if you look at the players who are the heartbeat of that Mexican side, they're also getting on a wee bit.
Marquez is...
God.
How old is he?
39, I think.
He's 39.
I think it's 39.
That's quite impressive, isn't it?
And he's,
I'm 39.
What is impressive, too, is that he used to play as a central defender.
Yeah.
But he's actually stepped up and he's playing in midfield, so which is the opposite of what people usually do when they get older.
Yeah, you're meant to just go back from centre-forward and eventually be, sort of clog it around with two knee braces on at centre-back. And Carlos Vela, who I think's in MLS, he is at MLS, I can't remember which side he's playing for. So we expect Germany to win that one convincingly. Barry, what do you reckon?
Convincingly.
Yeah, I'd imagine they will.
Brazil-Switzerland, 7 p.m. A lot of people...
Carlos Vela's, by the way, or Vela is at Los Angeles FC.
Is he? Thank you so much, Barry. Brazil, Switzerland, 7 p.m., another of the favourites. Looking forward to seeing, after speaking to Tim Vickery quite a lot in the last year, about how impressed he's been with this Brazil side, and certainly how much they've changed since that game against Germany 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And what their manager's been doing.
Chich.
Chich. Tite?
Chich.
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 Okay.
Vickery pronounces it Chiche.
Chiche? Maybe Chiche.
Chichi.
Chachi. isn't he part of Donald Trump's regime? I think he is.
From Happy Days?
Yeah, he's a big fan. One of the Happy Days crew is a huge fan of Donald
Ralph
Trump.
Ralph
Mouth. It's not Ralph Mouth, and it's not Richard Cunningham. And I don't think it's Mr. Cunningham, because he can't still be around. It's Chachi. Yeah, he's sort of the famous PR guy that Donald Trump brings out for his speeches. You know, when the Democrats bring out every actor that exists.
And Donald Trump brings out Potsy and Chachi.
We've moved slightly away from the Brazil-Switzerland game.
With a big question about who is going to... Because Chichi has changed the way he's playing, the tactical setup has changed. So he's now playing like a 4-2-3-1, which was not necessarily the case beforehand. And one, which means he's got to leave one out of Paulinho, Fernandinho, and Casemiro. And apparently, it's Fernandinho who is going to...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is a bit of a surprise.
Are they all quite similar? Are they slightly similar? Are they? Is that unfair? I mean, Fernandinho...
I think it's a bit unfair. I think Fernandinho, for me, is perhaps not quite as defensive-minded as perhaps Casemiro is. Mm-hmm. I've heard Paulinho being described as a kind of a mix between an 8 and a 10, which surprises me a bit, but that's what I've heard him described as. And the fact that you can do without Fernandinho is quite something. But they've been remarkably impressive during the whole qualification campaign in South America, which is no picnic, and they were absolutely terrific. And they're also so versatile. They defend very well. There was this win against Germany, for example, and some German friends have said Germany deserved to win that. We were completely all over them, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is they know how to win these kind of games now with this kind of organization. So, very, very difficult to see beyond a Brazil win in this game, followed by some others.
Well, Switzerland obviously have Shaqiri, who we all love because he's...
And Granit Xhaka
Granit Xhaka, who's just signed a new contract.
Yeah,
Philippe.
Absolutely.
Are you pleased about that? His passing statistics are excellent.
Absolutely, they're fabulous.
Yeah.
They're not as good as John Stones is, but it would be interesting to see where he's played, because I know I've said many things, nasty things about Xhaka, or not very nice things about Xhaka, but he has been employed at Arsenal in a role which is not strictly speaking his, and with very little to cover himself, you know, in defensive midfield. So maybe with Unai Emery.
Who knows?
Who knows?
The future could be bright.
Who knows?
One comment from below the line from Simon Lee, talking about on the English broadcasters, we were praising Ian Dowie, weren't we, for his summarising yesterday.
Yeah.
But Simon said, did anyone else hear Ian Dowie criticising the Moroccan defender's body position as he headed the ball into his own net? People in glass houses remembering that incredible Ian Dowie own goal where he rose like a salmon, I think forgetting that he wasn't in the opposition penalty area and planted the ball in the bottom corner.
Well, he talks about what he knows.
Exactly.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that Ian Dowie? Oh, get on YouTube straight away. Okay. It's one of the, and the look of sort of sadness on his face is an absolute picture. Philippe, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Do we think four games in a day is not enough? Or Or I think it's too much?
It's. I don't think I've ever watched four in a day before.
I mean, I'm feeling slightly broken right now.
And then having to think about games that are on tomorrow and also saddled with the knowledge that in 12 hours' time, we'll be together again in a different studio.
Thank the Lord you've taken tomorrow's pod off.
Yeah, Yeah, so, four is too many, especially when you have to discuss them afterwards, because I can't remember what happened in which game. I have notes.
If someone put a gun to your head and said, you can't leave this room unless you tell me the 32 teams in the World Cup and their groups they're in, do you reckon you could do it?
Yes, but it would take a while.
Shall we try it?
No.
I'll be back tomorrow night, as I'm a glutton for punishment and agreed to do every single one of these. Alongside me, Paul Doyle and Paolo Bandini. Until then, goodbye.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.